Get your favorite beverage ready. It's time for the Peachtree Hoops Podcast.
Welcome to Peachtree Hoops. My name is Phil Nasons. I'm the co-host. He's Chris Willis, and he's also the co-host. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing good, Phil. How about you?
I'm doing better than the Hawks.
Well, they're you know, it's been up and down, but you know, right now we're on an upswing. You know, three straight wins, back 8 over .500. You know, I think things could be worse. You know, look at it that way.
Well, that's what I mean. That's how well I'm doing, because they are doing good. They've won three straight, and they're 37-29, and they're doing fantastic, and we're doing fantastic. We've made the top 100 over at Stitcher, which is a pretty impressive thing, all things considered. And we're on Maximum Sports Channels every day, and we're on the 405 Media, and we're on TuneIn and Google Play. We're also presented by PeachtreeHoops.com, and you folks need to head on over there daily, because Chris and his staff are tearing it up over there. Well done, dude.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, the staff gets all the credit for that. Brad and everybody else, they do most of the writing. But, you know, it's always fun. We're in the dog days of the NBA regular season. It gets tough this time of the year. You just kind of like get it over with and get to the playoffs. But, you know, there's been a lot to talk about this week, though. It's not been boring, that's for sure.
Well, it hasn't been boring, and I listen to Sirius NBA when I'm not working, and I sometimes call in or I'm asked to call in on shows, and this week they talked about the Hawks more in the last, I don't know, 10 days than they have all season, and a lot of it hasn't been good. Most of it's centered around Dennis Schroeder and his benching and what have you, and people are starting to question Mike Budenholzer a little bit more than they have in the past. And I'm one of them. I made a comment on the blog, and I kind of was vague, but you knew what I meant. And what do you do with this, the whole thing? Let's start with Dennis Schroeder. I mean, he's played fantastic recently. I thought he's been pretty good all year. He's really stepped it up a notch, but he gets in trouble a lot. What's the story with that, you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's been kind of a rocky return since the All-Star break for Dennis, who on the court is playing really well right now, but he had a strange incident against the Warriors where it led to him getting benched. He and Dwight Howard had a bit of a go back and forth on the court in the Golden State game earlier this week, and it resulted in him getting benched, and it was really interesting because he had scored 19 points in the first quarter. I believe he had 23 at that point of the bench, and so, you know, it is what it is. I think it rubbed a lot of people wrong. It didn't exactly, I've kind of scratched my head at it a little bit, you know, but I think it's just, you know, it's just part of the maturation process for Schroeder. We've seen the Hawks, and Budenholzer in particular, be quick to discipline him, or you know, to try to put him back in his place, or you know, try to lead him throughout his short career here in Atlanta. And I think this is just the latest chapter of that. But you know, one thing about it, Dennis has come back from that aggressive offensively, especially. He's been attacking the paint. He's playing well, so maybe, you know, just maybe something good came out of that, that situation. But, you just hope that eventually some of that stuff settles down. Being late, coming back from the All-Star break, getting suspended a game, you know, being late for team bus. That's not stuff that you want to see out of your point guard, who, you know, in a lot of ways is the leader of the team and is asked to lead the team, you know, on the court. So, you know, it's something you hope they clean up, but you know, it was kind of interesting. It got a lot of press and got a lot of people talking and a lot of discussion, started because of it.
Well, that's just it. You know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Mike Budenholzer is doing the same thing with Dennis Schroeder that Greg Popovich did with Tony Parker. They're two birds that kind of are similar. They both were young when they came into the NBA. They both could have stayed in Europe and probably made more money. Dennis Schröder is very good. And Dennis Schröder is very well known in Germany. I think that this is what you're seeing, is that he's doing the same thing to Schröder. He sees that same thing, or Schröder, same thing. And when he wants to lay the hammer, he's quick with him because he's trying to do what Popovich did with Tony Parker. Now, that worked out in San Antonio because, well, you had a couple little things behind Greg Popovich. One, Pop is Pop. Two, you had Tim Duncan over there who kind of like said, hey, look, you know, he ran the show. So who runs the show for this team? And it looks like Paul Millsap, because he said that he had talked to him privately. He talks to him often, him being Schröder, and he says, hey, he's like my little brother. So we've got a very similar situation. I hope it works out. I think Dennis Schröder's responded very well to this. I would hope that he would do this, and maybe that's what Budenholzer did, is he hoped for the same thing because he actually knows Dennis Schröder, where a lot of these guys who are opining about this situation don't know either party very well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to go to the Millsap stuff, especially. You know, I think it was clear that Millsap's the leader of this team. And, you know, and I think the incident, it's worth mentioning, you know, the incident came between Dennis and Dwight Howard, who, you know, I mean, has got his own history there. And, you know, over his career, he's been good in Atlanta. But, I mean, I think a lot of these guys that are with the Hawks now have watched Dennis grow up. You know, during his short time in Atlanta, I think they do approach him as a guy that's, you know, kind of their little brother. They've seen him act out, you know, they've seen him disciplined, and they've seen him grow from it. And, you know, a guy like Howard, who's just gotten here, you know, so there's going to be some bumps in the road, you know, from that standpoint. But yeah, I think it was a good point. I thought the Hawks handled it pretty well. You know, they didn't look like they really wanted to talk about it a whole lot to start with. Millsap reached out to Schröder. Coach Bud met with Schröder. You know, I think it's just one of those things that just going to happen. It happens a lot, you know, over 82 game season, probably a lot more than we ever realize.
Well, that's just it. I agree with that too, because you know what, at the end of the day, Dwight Howard has a history of this. Nobody seems to like him, his teammates anyway. And this is not just an isolated situation. It happens. But it always seems to center around Dwight Howard. Now, we didn't see these things happen the last couple seasons, maybe because, well, there was no reason for it to happen. But it's pretty hard to get on Dwight all the time, because here's a guy who, in that Golden State game, pulled down 19 boards, and then he pulled down 14 the next night against Brooklyn. You know, but Dennis Schröder did say, Dwight and I need to sit down because we're not always on the same page. And I think that that's important. I don't know if that's going to ever happen where they sit down. I saw Dwight Howard, I don't follow NBA players on Twitter, but I saw Dwight Howard had tweeted something about Dennis. So who knows? But then Dwight Howard has a history of being nice to people while he's behind the scenes being not so nice. So that's a delicate way of putting it. I don't know, you know, but at the end of the day, people were talking about Coach Budenholzer and President Budenholzer, and that's what I wanted. I called into Sirius and wanted them to make a distinction between the two. There's two different Mike Budenholzers. There's head coach Mike Budenholzer, and then there's the president of basketball operations Budenholzer. Now, I don't have too many negative things to say about Mike Budenholzer, head coach. But Mike Budenholzer, president of basketball operations, sometimes leaves me scratching my head, particularly since this summer when he signed Dwight Howard. That's a head-scratcher to me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just Dwight Howard. It was, you know, it's been a lot of things. And, you know, and I've been as vocal and as, you know, opinionated about a lot of these moves as anybody has. But, you know, I think it's important to note, yeah, Coach Budenholzer's he's also the president of basketball operations, but there's a group of people making decisions. And, you know, the biggest, one of the biggest criticisms we've had this year was the the seemingly flip-flopping back and forth that this franchise has done between we're going to tear down or no, we're all in, you know, and you know, there's a lot of factors that goes into that, you know, right or wrong. And I think they've had to navigate a lot of things. You know, you're not going to trade. There's no NBA team in the league that's going to trade a star player the caliber of Paul Millsap without getting ownership signing off on the move. You know, I think it's important to realize, you know, you hear this all the time. Well, Danny Ferry wouldn't have done this, but people don't understand that the reason Danny Ferry regime was such a breath of fresh air for this Hawks franchise was because it wasn't just Ferry making the decisions. He had Bud in the room. He had guys like Wes Wilcox in the room. There was a collaborative effort. Where in the past, I mean, I've talked to Larry Drew in the past, and he had no idea that a player had been recalled from the D-League. There was no communication with the front office. He had no idea why the guy was there. So, you know, that's not the same. It's completely not the same. And, you know, so while we point at President Bud, you know, I think it's still a group of people. It's still a group of people in the room making decisions. Yes, Bud's got the final say, but we all know ownership has the real final say in everything. And we don't really know, you know, what the discussions have been behind closed doors.
That's exactly right. You know, most NBA presidents are really P&Os, presidents in name only. And they have owners behind them who basically, essentially tell them what to do. Now, Greg Popovich is not one of those guys. But then again, who's going to tell Greg Popovich what to do about his basketball team? Very few people. You know, I question that whole coaching tree thing often. Well, you know that. And what I say is that I wouldn't judge these young guys, Budenholzer and the kid in Brooklyn and the other guy in Philly, Brett Brown. I wouldn't judge them by what they do because they were Budenholzer's guys. Or, I'm sorry, Popovich's guys, if that makes sense. I would think that because Greg Popovich is in his own level. And I don't care how much you sit underneath somebody. If you don't have the same people behind you as, say, he does, which no one does in the NBA, then you're probably not going to ever be as successful as he is. I mean, nobody tells him what to do. I'm guaranteeing you that President Budenholzer has people telling him what to do, and I bet you that he doesn't always agree with them either. But that being said, who's responsible for this roster? Now, I got into a Twitter discussion with a few people. One of them in particular is a girl whose father was a very well-known sideline reporter. And I will say this. She's a very vocal Bud supporter and a Hawks supporter to the point where she says we when referring to the Hawks. And I told her straight up, I said, wait a second, you don't ever try to judge Budenholzer by Greg Popovich. They're two different things. They don't have the same support base. That being said, she was trying to tell me that this is Danny Ferry's team, which I knew already, and now it's Budenholzer's team. And I tried to explain to her that this hasn't been Danny Ferry's team for a couple of seasons now, especially this year, and that it's time to start forgetting about Danny Ferry and start to look at Mike Budenholzer as the president. And my thing is who's responsible for these things? Is it President Budenholzer? Is it Coach Budenholzer? Is it the front office? Is it the players? Who do you think's responsible for this? I hope I made some sense there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to unpack there, but let me back up to Popovich now, and this is one thing that you know, we had heard from I'd heard Danny Ferry say, and I've also heard Mike Budenholzer say this, is that a guy like Pop, you know, you said who is going to challenge Pop, but the Ferry and Budenholzer both indicated that Pop would have those meetings. He wanted people to challenge him. You know, he didn't want everybody to come in and say agree with his idea and to go on, you know, with things. So I think there's a dynamic between he and R.C. Buford. And I think the Hawks have a lot of that with Wes Wilcox. I don't think that everybody ever sits down in the room and is all in 100% agreement. Yes, when a time comes that a decision has to be made, Budenholzer probably carries more weight in that discussion. Unless it's a situation where, you know, the ownership trumps everybody in the NBA to an extent. I think San Antonio is a great example of a situation where ownership is probably going to do whatever Greg Popovich wants, and he's earned that right. But that's not the case everywhere, you know, and I think that's important to note. You know, I mean, as far as who's responsible, I mean, they built this roster, you know. I mean, we scratched our head all summer trying to figure out, you know, exactly where they're going. And you know, we've been negative to the point that it looks like it's not a bad team. I mean, they're 8 games over .500. They're in the middle of the Eastern Conference playoffs, I think. But there's going to be some serious questions coming up this summer. And when you look at the big picture thing, you kind of scratch your head a little bit. But, you know, as far as fielding a competitive team, they've done that. I think it's just the biggest criticism I have is the direction they're going. You know, are they? I think it's really, really difficult to dip your toe into rebuilding and to also try to win now. I think you can do it to an extent when the cap mechanics are in favor, in your favor. But the Hawks, as soon as this summer, that's no longer going to be the case. I mean, they're going to be operating above the salary cap if they retain Millsap and if they keep Tim Hardaway Jr. around. And now you're talking about paying above the cap, getting very close to the salary, to the tax threshold for a team that's probably not going to compete to go to the NBA Finals with the way it looks right now. So, you know, there's a lot of you know, questions to be answered there. But there's a whole nother element to that as well. You know, you're talking about a fan base here that I think there's a rabid section of it, and there's a lot of Hawks fans out there. But, you know, when you look at attendance, it's in the lower half of the league. It's kind of a fickle fan base in that, you know, they're all in when things are great, but they'll jump off, you know, at the first sign of trouble. You know, I think they have to keep in mind, you know, you have to keep that in mind when you're trying to make decisions. And I think some of that has played into the decision-making process of some of these moves. You know, we've already heard season tickets are going up pretty profoundly for next season. You know, maybe it's a little harder to do that if you strip the roster down. Maybe it's a little harder to do that, you know, if you going forward. Maybe it's harder to ask guy to pay 50% more for season tickets if you just completely tore down the roster in the middle of a playoff push. So, you know, there's a lot of things at work here. You know, from an organizational standpoint, D-League team's coming. Phillips Arena renovations is coming. Brand new state-of-the-art practice facility is going to be one of the best in the thing. They're doing a ton of good things, but I think they're going to have to turn their attention to the on court product, and they're going to have to figure out, hey, you know, we've got some serious questions we're going to have to do here. And for myself, my opinion, I think it's going to be really hard to get where they want to go without taking a slight step backwards. But you know, we'll have to just wait and see, you know, if they're going to do that. I mean, if you're going to be all in, I think you've got to be all in. And if you're going to rebuild, I think you're going to have to rebuild. You know, I don't think you can just operate in this middle space, you know, as a normal situation.
Yeah, this summer is going to be challenging because you do have decisions. Obviously, you don't want to lose Paul Millsap and let him get away without getting any compensation whatsoever. And if you do that, you're going to have to match whoever gives Tim Hardaway Jr. crazy money, because that's what he's going to get, crazy money. He's having a contract year. Now, I'm not so sure he's going to be worth that crazy money, but one thing is clear. Since he's moved to the bench, the basketball team wins games. That's a good thing.
You know, that's been a good debate. I mean, that was one of the best debates on the site this week. You know, it was a little bit of a controversial move the way Tim's been playing. You know, I kind of understand it. I wrote a little bit about it early on, you know, when they moved him. Just because from the standpoint that I think Tim's going to score. It doesn't matter if he comes off the bench, if he starts. He's going to score the way he's playing right now. But still, you know, the way this team's constructed, if they're not on point defensively, I think that's the key And I think that's the place, and I think that's why you see Bazemore, Thabo Sefolosha starting. Bazemore, you know, he's been up and down all season. He's not the offensive player that Tim Hardaway Jr. is, but what he is a versatile defender who's guarded everyone from point guards to small forwards. Hardaway is a classic shooting guard. You know, he's not going to slide to the small forward. He's not going to slide and defend opposing point guards. And if you look at his splits, Hardaway's got better numbers as a starter, but his efficiency takes a hit. But the most interesting stat there is his defensive rating. As a reserve, he's at 99.8 in 46 games, and that's about 23 minutes a game. And 18 games as a starter, it's over 33 minutes, but his defensive rating balloons all the way to 108.7. That's a pretty significant difference there. His net rating, 7.8 as a reserve, 1.2 as a starter. And I think you kind of read into that. You know, the point I was trying to make is it doesn't really matter that much whether he starts or not. If he's rolling, he's going to play a lot of minutes. And he's going to be on the court at the end of the games. If he's not playing well, then he'll be setting. You know, and I mean, and that's pretty much the case for anybody, you know, as far as this Hawks team goes. I mean, we see them close plenty of times without we've seen Dennis Schroeder on the bench at crunch time, albeit not as much of late. We've seen Dwight Howard on the bench at the end of games. You know, it's kind of a open audition with the wings is whoever's playing well, that's kind of who's out there, you know, so. You know, I kind of think Bud's – I think I see where Bud's coming from in this. It's just tough when you see Hardaway putting up these, you know, these crazy numbers. It seems like every night he's played so well, you know, for the last couple of months.
That was a very good summation. I agree with it, too. You know, I'm not a fan of Tim Hardaway Jr.'s at all. I give him his props, though. But here's the thing. He hurts the Hawks as a starter, and he helps the Hawks as a reserve because he can guard reserves. He can't guard starters. That's why he didn't make it in New York. Why do you think they gave him away? Do you think a starving team that's a lottery team would give away a guy who could really play if there weren't flaws? And they got a number one pick for him. The thing is his flaw is he can't guard the guys that he needs to guard as a starter in the NBA, but he can match up well with the other guys, and more importantly, he can outscore them because he's a starter offensively and defensively. He's not. He's just a liability, and when you sum that up, you're looking at a 14-point difference when he comes off the bench. That's huge. Those numbers are not a joke. If you have a rating of defensive rating as a shooting guard in this NBA with this climate and this the way it's played of nothing but threes and you've got a 99.8 rating, you're doing pretty damn good. But when you have a 108.7 rating, you're doing pretty darn bad. So my thing is I agree, and that makes sense for Coach Budenholzer to make that move to get that jump start off the for his offense off the bench without killing his team. You want a guy like Tim Hardaway to help you, not hurt you. And this is where he helps you. So let's stop the old Hardaway needs to start routine and let's hope that he keeps scoring and playing defense like he has against second stringers like he is.
Yeah, and let's talk about one other aspect of this argument. And people, this is what people came back at me, you know, a lot of the time that Hardaway was starting, it was in place of Thabo Sefolosha. I think a lot of people are clamoring to get a look at Hardaway Sefolosha starting lineup, and with Bazemore coming off the bench. And you know, there's a couple of things to add there. Again, I'll go back to the defensive versatility. Dennis Schroeder's defensive numbers haven't been great this year. We've seen Bazemore guard point guards a lot of the time. That's Sefolosha's done that as well, but it's a little bit more of a stretch for him. You know, Hardaway is not really capable of that. So I think, you know, that's the reason and I see for keeping Bazemore in there and keeping him on the floor. We get caught up in Bazemore's offensive numbers so much, but his primary job is on the defensive end of the floor. Now, you know, is he a great defender? The metrics suggest, you know, he's probably taken a step backwards this season. I think a lot of the Hawks' wing defense and everything, I think it's been an adjustment period because this team's a lot different than what it was last year. But, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. But, again, I just think it doesn't matter a whole lot because the guys that are playing well are going to be on the floor at the end of the game, you know, and I don't think cutting, you know, Hardaway's the type of player that I want him. His efficiency this season is what's made him great. It's not that he's hitting 20 points a game. If he was doing that and not and being inefficient, then, you know, it's not the same thing. But he's been really efficient off the bench. And I think, you know, holding his minutes down a little bit and limiting some of his opportunities, you know, I think it can actually help him. And I think that's what the Hawks are trying to do.
And I think that's right. You know what you have with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Dennis Schroeder starting together? You have Portland, minus the offensive explosion. Portland, at least those backcourt can score. They can't stop anybody. This team needs to stop people. This Mike Budenholzer has always said, at least I think that's correct, is that defense matters to us. And playing 3-on-5 with Dwight Howard back there, who sometimes is interested in, sometimes, let's face it, isn't. You can't put those guys out on the floor together for long periods of time. Whereas you bring him Tim in as a reserve, and he gets to play a little more with that second unit, he gets to be the leader that he's trying to be without the pressure, and he gets to play defense, and he scores, and he ends up with a plus at the end of the game instead of a minus. Unlike, say, Kent Bazemore, who gets stuck. You know, Kent Bazemore is in a rocky spot because he's guarding, like you said earlier, guard anywhere from the 1 to 3. And that's tough to adjust to. And then he's struggling offensively, and that's got to take its toll mentally. You know, I'm surprised he hasn't had a nervous breakdown, or I bet he's shut off everything, because if he listens to radio shows and he reads blogs and comments, he's going to find out that he's going to think he sucks, because that's what everybody thinks. When in reality, he's had to make more defensive adjustments than any other member of this Hawks team. And I think he's done all good, all things considered, especially the last couple of months, Chris.
Agreed. And, I mean, the thing that works against Bazemore is he, you know, everybody loved this guy when he was making $2 million a year. But, you know, he's not making $2 million anymore. He signed a 4-year, $70 million contract, which in a lot of ways was the result of, you know, the NBA's cap explosion and the going rate asking price for a lot of these wing players. You know, a lot of these contracts are not going to be deemed good contracts. And I think a lot of people were expecting Bazemore to make another leap. And I think some of us wondered last season whether that was even possible. You know, so, I mean, I think you almost have to take the contract out of it. The Hawks have already invested in Bazemore, you know, and as long as he's here, he's going to be making what he's going to be making. And, you know, but I think that's the big thing. You know, since January 1, he's not been that much different than he was last year. The difference is the size of his paycheck. And I think a lot of people have latched onto him for, you know, as a reason you see this team go up and down so much, you know, and I'm not completely sure that's fair.
And I think that's right, too. You know, the old contract year, allegedly he blew up and then he got paid and now he's not doing so well. Let's not forget that he also had Al Horford with him out there on the floor who helped out a lot. And that, you know, you can say whatever you want, and I'm not picking on Dwight Howard here. Dwight gets his rebounds no matter what happens because Dwight's always going to get his. But Al Horford was a little more helpful to these wing guys as a defender because he could go out there and trap, he could challenge, whereas Dwight Howard really can't do any of those things. So it's a little bit different now for him, and he's made an adjustment, and he's asked to do a lot of heavy lifting on that defensive end because, don't forget, for all the faults Jeff Teague had, defense wasn't one of them. Ask the Indiana Pacers. They love his defense. You don't beat that team at the point guard very often. So there's a lot going on there. He's asked to do a lot. He's done pretty well, all things considered. Does he want to be a better offense? I saw somebody actually say he doesn't want to play offense. What? Are you kidding me? Every one of these guys on this NBA teams could score 20 points a game if they were put in that role. Some of them are asked not to. Look at their college stats. I mean, they could score. Look at their high school stats. They could score. Kent Bazemore has to do a lot, and a lot of it has to do with the defensive end, and that's why he's in there. And I can tell you this. If you take Bazemore out of this equation for a couple of games, three or four games, five games, you're going to see a big difference, and you're going to realize that he's earning his money because he's asked to do a heck of a lot. And I'm going to stay on Bazemore's side here, Chris. I'm going to take his side and defend the little young fella because he's working hard, I think. It's just his shot doesn't fall. He's busy.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about the burden he carries, you know, a lot. You know, I wasn't a fan of the contract. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I mean, if the Hawks hadn't given it to him, somebody else was going to. You know, and I think that's an important thing. But I think you made a great point. You know, Al Horford helped these wing players, not just defensively, but offensively as well with his passing. And, you know, and some of the other stuff. So it's a different dynamic for him. I think Kent really struggled early on. But, you know, again, since January 1, he's played a lot better. Now, he's been up and down just about like everybody on this team has. But, you know, given the responsibility that he usually draws the opponent's, you know, number one wing scorer in a lot of cases, you know, it's hard to be too critical there.
I would think so. Now, we got to start wrapping this up, but we have three games this week. San Antonio in San Antonio, then Memphis and Portland at home. So just three games this week. Three tough games against teams that probably could make the playoffs. I'm not so sure Portland will, but they handled Memphis in Memphis by 17. That's not the same Memphis Grizzlies team. They're coasting now. So San Antonio's missing LaMarcus Aldridge. That's a horrible news. He's got heart arrhythmia. That's a horrible thing. And no Kawhi Leonard. This team should win all three games this week.
It's possibility. And at one point last week, it looked like the season was over, you know, basically. They were fixing to go in the toilet. But those big wins on Friday against the Raptors and the Grizzlies on Saturday has kind of revived everyone again. The Spurs game's interesting because, you know, the Hawks finally on New Year's, you know, broke the curse, so to speak, finally got Bud that win over Pop. You know, that's a game Pop may not want to admit it, but I bet there's somewhere deep down he would really like to get that one, you know, again the next time. But Kawhi Leonard's in concussion protocol, like you just mentioned Aldridge. You know, they're a little bit vulnerable right now. You don't know who they're going to have available. You know, they're never an easy out. Greg Popovich team's never an easy out. And then, you know, that's for sure. So then you look at, you know, Memphis is struggling right now. But, you know, again, you're almost stopped short of guaranteeing anything with this Hawks team because you just never know what you're going to get from night to night. But that'll be, I believe that one's coming up on Thursday. So they'll have some time off there, you know, with a way to rest a little bit and get their legs back under them. So, you know, it's going to be a fun week. We've had some – it's the dog days of the NBA summer. I mentioned that earlier. But there's been some great matchups, you know, post-All-Star break for this Hawks team. You know, there's been some interesting things to – teams to see and, you know, a lot of storylines to follow. So, you know, it's kind of been you know, it's been intriguing anyway, even if we do all have kind of sort of have one eye already on the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what Memphis has, both eyes on theirs. I would be remiss to also note that Tony Parker's injured too. So that's going to be an interesting game on Monday. I want to see the Hawks steal that one, and I want to see them steal a game against Memphis. I know Memphis pretty well, and I know Portland pretty well. I really want them to beat Portland, though. I mean, really, because I do that Memphis Grizzlies show, so I don't like it when they aren't competitive because we catch hell then, you know, because it's our fault for pointing things out. But the Portland game, this is going to be a fun week if you're a Hawks fan, and it's going to be a fun week if you're an NBA fan. And even more importantly, it's a fun week if you are following PeachtreeHoops.com every single day, because every day Chris and his staff have something new coming out, and it's a lot of fun. We got this show. It's the number one rated show for a reason, Hawk show anyway. And we want to thank you all for listening. For Chris Willis, I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to Peachtree Hoops.